Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Welcome to The Morning After, episode 37. I'm your host, Jason Colucci, broadcasting live from Roberta's heritagenetwork.gov org. What are we now? We're an org. No longer .com. Joe, right? Oh, his microphone isn't on.
No, it's not. Oh, there we go.
Right.
Yeah, .biz, GeoCities, Yahoo.
Are we on, live on Prodigy?
Yeah. Find us on LinkedIn.
How you feeling?
Better. Thank you so much.
You left early. Do you get a personal day here at Heritage Radio? You left early last week. I was a little nervous about you.
Yeah, it was, I think I just had, too many pot stickers the night before. You ever have that pot sticker thing?
No.
All right. I'm going to turn the mic off.
Moving on. It's interesting you bring up pot stickers because I've been sifting through Monday. I've been doing some research the past couple of days for my parents on the Martha Stewart Network. Our good friend Amanda Freitag, currently a judge on Chopped, Gun for Hire. She's the guest host for the week on Martha's show called Cooking Today. It airs live and replays at 3 o'clock, and it replays about 100 times after that on that same day. Check it out. So I've kind of been doing research. I read, and I'm going to go through every magazine that I bought at Barnes and Noble. Manhattan Magazine, The Vegetarian Times, the paper of record for vegans. New York Magazine, Martha Stewart Living, my favorite. I love that. I love this one. Edible Brooklyn, which has a great article on Ann Saxelby. I think whoever wrote that stalks Ann Saxelby. It's about 10 pages long. Bon Appetit. Savoir. How do I say this?
Savoir.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Food Network Propaganda Magazine. Food and Wine. Of course, Dana Cowan hasn't gained a pound since she started this magazine. I don't know if she started. Eating Well, which has a piece of corn on it. I guarantee if you Google Eating Well, they probably had a piece of corn on it 20 times, but probably the worst thing for you is corn. Wouldn't everyone agree on that one?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Clean Eating. The Shish Kebab Issue. And Gourmet Easy Dinners. Isn't it so easy? I love cooking. It's so easy. It's so easy.
Is that the name of a magazine, Gourmet Easy Dinners?
It is. 109 Simple Summer Classics. Thank you, Mr. Is it, would I call you Russ Tupper?
No, Tupper.
Just Mr. Tupper?
Yeah.
Josh Russ Tupper, co-owner of Russ and Daughters, is in studio. And also we have Gustavo and Gabriela Lopez, owners of Vinataria, future owner. I mean, you guys are in the works. It's going to open. You're breaking ground on Monday, correct?
We are, yes.
Are you guys well rested?
The what?
Are you guys well rested or at this
not
point?
Not really.
Because you're also, well, we'll talk about this more in the segment, but you're also full-time restaurant service industry.
We are, yes.
And
so
open,
kind of, and
opening a place. God bless you. one of the things I will bring up is, we're kind of doing research for the show, is I've kind of creating a timeline for at least New York City specific, which I think can go, you can apply this to a national kind of aesthetic, which you would consider, Josh, what are your thoughts on this? Because you're pretty seasoned on this stuff. Joe Baum to Danny Meyer, June Eporin, the age of the restaurateur.
Joe Baum.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just kind of generalizing here. Of course, there's probably one other names, but I'm just kind of giving segments, I think, that kind of split up the New York City specific kind of thing. And then Daniel Ballou leaves Le Cirque and you start the Age of the Chef.
Right.
And I would say that the Age of the Chef dies with, say, Emeril, Mario, Wolfgang.
And the Food Network.
And that's what I call the Age of the Food Network star. See?
Right.
All right, I'm getting something here.
Yeah.
And now I feel like we're in the age of the PR department.
Hmm.
Because who else would give me a show unless there is a PR behind it? Would you guys kind of agree on that stuff or a little bit? Or
sadly, we do.
Yeah.
And we all suffer from this, but we all kind of, you know, we can kind of move forward. You can go on Facebook, Twitter, all this stuff helps us out. And having a PR department behind you gets you on the cover of, let's see, at least New York Magazine. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
and we have actually some interesting music playing today. Jess, who's, I have Michelle. I'm gonna mess up these names.
They're called Mashandi Shalimar, husband and wife team from the Bay Area, Michelle Hannigan and Andy Rothbard. The little sitar in there, it kind of sounds like when the Beatles came back from India.
It sounds like you practiced that pronunciation, Mashandi.
Mashandi, I think it's hilarious. Michelle and Andy together.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's like, I thought it was something like Eastern of the sitar music.
Hanging out with the. Back when hanging out with Ravi Shankar, that kind of stuff. And isn't Nora Jones is Ravi Shankar's daughter?
Illegitimate.
Ooh, but still, she got a couple. Speaking of PR departments and breaks and everything.
She hates him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I actually grew up with a guy that studied under Ravi Shankar. But Nora Jones, I don't think, likes her father at all.
Sorry to hear that. But Jess, let's listen to the first one. Let's take it out. We'll come back. We'll talk a little Nora Jones with Josh. Maybe we'll bring up Russ and Daughters.
There you go.
Cane Vineyard and Winery are proud to support Heritage Radio Network, the growing movement to change the way we eat and think about our planet. For more information, go to cane5.com.
Oh. I just had a flashback from Bonnaroo. Bonnaroo flashback.
Bonnaroo. I was having flashbacks from my days of college and dropping tabs of stuff with that music.
Josh Russ Tupper, co-owner, Russ and Daughters. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, were you in college? Did you know your fate at that point, or did you have aspirations to kind of...
I had no idea. It's an interesting story because I was studying chemical engineering and worked in that field for 5 years out west in the Pacific Northwest. We like to call it Silicon Forest. And I did chemical engineering and semiconductors for 5 years.
And then you get a call from...
Not really. My aunt and uncle owned and ran the business at the time.
So can you start, I guess, for the audience, with a brief history of
sure.
And how it kind of moved up the generations, because
sure.
This company...
So it's Russ and Daughters. My great-grandfather, Joel Russ, started the business in 1914, actually before that. He had a push cart on like Orchard Street and that in the Lower East Side and sold herrings and mushrooms, the same mushrooms we actually sell today, these dried Polish mushrooms. And so he started the business in 1914. He had three daughters and no sons. Oh, so yeah. We like to think of him as one of the first feminists. Now, I didn't know the man, but I think that may not be true. So when they started working in the business and met their husbands, I think he then named it Russ and Daughters. And then from him, he passed it down to the three girls and their husbands. And I was just explaining to you guys that I couldn't imagine running a business with three couples. You know, all and it's a small little business. It was a lot smaller then.
Yeah. I mean, now it sounds insane, but, you know, even then with like, just that neighborhood, you know, running a business and just New York City and just, you know, people, crazy people walking by and everything else that happens.
Well, that neighborhood was
insane.
And
family blood, you know, kind of rolling through that place.
No, exactly. The family dynamic and the arguing, and I imagine it was a little wild. So my grandmother and grandfather were the last of the three couples to stay involved in the business. And
the survivalist.
Right. Well, I mean, my great aunt started another appetizing store, I think, in Long Island. And I don't know, the other aunt did something else. So my grandma and the grandfather, when my grandfather started having heart attacks, I think he had eight of them. My uncle, who was then a lawyer, came in because my grandfather was unable to be involved and run the business. He was sick. So my uncle, who didn't realize he was going to get into the business, went there and said, oh, you know, I'll help out here and then I'll do law on the side. And that was the last day he practiced law when he stepped into the business.
What decade are we talking about now?
That was 78.
78. I think,
yeah. So, and at that time, this is probably your image of the Lower East Side. It was a nasty place.
Yeah.
It was, you know, drug addicts and artists. Not nasty, but...
So were you making a lot of the people walking in there, a lot of the old Jewish community that was going there for years? Is that kind of...
At that time?
What got you through that time in the 70s? Or
yeah, and people traveled because everyone that grew up on the old Lower East Side, which was one of the most densely populated areas of the world, or the most, at the turn of the century, was where all the immigrants, you know, Jewish, German, Italian, came and lived to start their lives in the States. It was where they basically worked their butts off to get out of there. So we had this clientele that traveled from, you know, uptown, New Jersey, Long Island to come and shop in the store. And that is definitely what got us through those tough times.
And now you have that, and now it's even a national...
Well, the neighborhood is completely insane. So my aunt and uncle ran it, and then, like I said, I was working in the Pacific Northwest in semiconductors, and my uncle started talking about retiring, and his kids didn't want to be involved in the business. My cousin, who I now own and run the business with, Nikki Russ Fetterman,
my neighbor.
Right, who you know. She's a little younger than I am, and she was kind of, you know, in school and doing her thing. I think she was in the art world for a while and did some business school. Wasn't interested. And then her brother, the black sheep of the family, is a pediatric oncologist at UCLA Medical Center. Funny black sheep, but he didn't want anything to do with the business. No.
And now you guys are there every day running it. And you have it seems to me that the staff that works in there has been there a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, me and Nikki are there. We kind of give each other a break. But our staff is one of the most important. I was also telling you guys that we have two people that have been there over 30 years. One guy 32 years, one guy 36 years, I think. And two or three other people that have been there over 20 years.
And are they just kind of at the age now where they just want to get out of the house kind of thing? You just like give them one shift, or are they full-time kind of employees? Because I love stuff like this. This is my thing.
These are full-time employees. And very dedicated to the business and love the business as much as I do, which is really important, because in a lot of businesses you have an owner that is the only one that really cares, and everyone else is there to, you know, get through the day and put some money in their pocket, which is difficult for a business, because then the owner should be there 24/7, because if he's not there, then no one's going to care.
Yeah. Now procuring products like, you know, salmon and everything in that end of the business, like the herring and stuff, has that, you know, now that this whole local movement has happened and things are trying to be a little more artisanal, have you changed anything, or has the formula been the same?
We have changed a little. It's difficult in the smoked fish business to know exactly where raw materials are coming from. We do like to grill the people we get fish from. And talk about what the feeds they're using, because a lot of the salmon is farmed now. Talk about things like that. But it's difficult for us to control that from the beginning of the process to the end of the process. We have found a couple smokehouses that are doing very good things. One is actually in New Zealand, which in terms of environmental footprint is not maybe great, but they grow the fish and smoke the fish, and it's completely natural and in one of the cleanest environments in the world, which is nice. So we're attempting to do the things that we can to make it better for the environment and greener and things like that, but it's not so easy all the time.
Well, you walk in and on the left-hand side, there's the whole fish side, and then on the right-hand side, there's like a chocolate thing. What's that all about?
It seems strange to a lot of people, but...
Oh, I mean, has that been... I didn't grow up in the neighborhood
for
so,
a long time.
I worked down the block and bought product from you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would walk in and be like, what is this all about?
Yeah, what's with the candy and the fish?
Yeah.
I love the little kids come in.
Square
and see
footage,
the candy.
We got a man.
They see the candy and then they smell the fish and they're like, oh. Like, is it the chocolate that smells so bad? It's actually a wonderful smell. That has been there, I think, potentially since the beginning. And for whatever reason, maybe it was sort of a one-stop shopping type thing. You get your fish and appetizing, which we should talk about actually as a noun. And then you get your dessert as well.
Yeah.
So it's
one-stop shopping.
Yeah, it's been going together for a long time.
And you were the first time we met. Well, you met before that, but it was officially interviewed was at Googa Mooga.
Yeah,
and
in a shower.
In our mobile studio, which was a shower. But
I think I asked you if I had to take off my clothes to get in there.
Yeah, you could have actually. More Bonnaroo, but Googa Mooga was a little more tamed. Everyone's branching out, right?
Yeah.
Everyone that's doing everything. Is there a specific... And you guys can open an outpost in Vegas if you... I'm sure you've been approached by, like, somebody to come and open an outpost somewhere else. Has there been a specific decision not to do that?
There has not. One of the things that we're up against with any expansion, whatever we do, is we have a very strong brand that's focused around history of my family.
Yeah.
So anything that we do...
You don't want to dilute it.
We don't want to dilute the brand. We don't want to affect the business and the store the way it is right now. So we're very concerned and have to be very careful about how we open another place or do something else. And there may be something in the works.
There is.
Maybe.
And you'll give us the exclusive here in a few weeks.
Sure.
Yeah. What's that? There's that Kanish place, like two store. You know
Yonah
that place?
Shimmel's.
What is that place? Has that been there for 100? It's like a picture of Woody Allen.
I think you're 130 years, maybe, that place has been
there. It's been there longer.
Yeah.
Your great grandfather used to fight with him over the sidewalk being dirty or something.
It looks like the place has been there 130 years. It's one of the old and the last places from the old Lower East Side, which is special.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, I can't eat a Kanish because I get terrible heartburn because of the amount of mustard I have to put on it.
Just to get it to
wash it down.
Well, speaking of dining experiences, you definitely are a seasoned New Yorker and you're out all the time. And, you know, we were sitting down outside here. We weren't getting stung by the bees outside of Roberta's. But any interesting dining experiences that you've had or have you gone out, you know?
I go out 5 or 6 nights.
Yeah, I could tell. That's what I'm at.
To dinner.
You run a business.
I work all day and I go out and buy myself dinner.
What time does the shop close?
8 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So yeah, it's fine. I usually get out of there a little before. I have been to ABC Kitchen a couple times.
Great, right?
I didn't realize I knew the chef, but he works out at my gym, Dan Kluger. And the last time I went there, and we both kind of realized it came out, and he's like, hey, what's up? I had an amazing meal. And what else? The new Il Buco Alimentari.
And that's another staple in the neighborhood it's not as old as,
Il
Buco. But I'm saying that's another, like, place that's decently close to you.
Right.
That's been there 40 years, I don't know, 30 years? How long has Il Buco been there?
Maybe 20, 25.
But for that area, I mean, there's not a lot of stuff going on, you know, going on there.
That restaurant opened when Bond Street there wasn't much, and now it's like one of the craziest, most expensive blocks in the city, probably, I think, to live.
And what do you think about that place, Mile End? Sort of like in the same
I like a lot
genre,
the sandwich,
genre of
the
food
sandwich shop. I know those guys and love Mile End, and I'm glad that they opened there. It's a good spot for a lunch sandwich.
You going to hang out and talk a little bit about some shop later in our last segment?
Yeah, sure.
We got a whole hour talking points here, about 15 magazines.
Sounds good.
Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk to Gustavo and Gabriela Lopez. I want to hear about what it's like to open a new restaurant in New York City. I've opened about 6, not me personally, but I've been part of 6 openings, so I'd love to hear it from your perspective as business owners. Morning after.
Come.
We're talking here shop with Mr. Tupper, the sole heir.
No.
No. Oh, I'm kidding.
You know, Nikki.
Well, Nikki just had a baby, right? Didn't Nikki?
Nikki had a baby, I think, 9 months ago.
Mazel tov.
And she'd probably be here, but she's in France.
With, tough life. Tough life, you kid. Tough life, you kids have. Gustavo, Gabriela, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Welcome to the morning after.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so this is a great story. I think I've heard this one before. Did you guys meet in a restaurant?
We did. Yes. 10 years ago.
So you're in New York City?
I'm sorry?
You're working, like, when you meet, where are you guys looking?
We were working in a restaurant called San Cubano, which was in the Meatpacking.
Right next to Western Beef.
Yes. Yeah. It was one of the first business to open there. I mean, it was Pastis there, Western
Beef. You have Lotus was right next to there, that club?
They opened after San Cubano, like a year or two after San Cubano did.
And San Cubano was a hot restaurant.
It was.
I mean, it's first, as a fan of Cuban food myself, it was definitely a cool spot. I mean, there was nothing going on. Pastis, Keith McNally, my old boss. And that was all that was happening there.
Yeah.
And then...
the Apple Store.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, so the Apple Store. So you meet, and then you're working, and you decide it's time to maybe get a place going or talk about having a place, or you guys are always talking about a place?
We always talk about having a place, but before that, we went to culinary school together. And from there, we started working in kitchens. I worked for like a year. I couldn't handle the heat, I guess. So I work at Boqueria for a little bit, and then I work at Valse.
Okay.
And then I was like back to the front of the house at Boqueria. And Gustavo stayed working in kitchens. And after that, we were like, we are ready. And we choose Harlem to be the neighborhood because we feel that there is a space for us there. And
where is the space located?
It's on 119th and Frederick Douglass. It's right in the corner.
And what's the concept?
Talking about the people.
Well, it's interesting because I used to work for a company, and a lot of people that were involved in this company came from, like, one person worked for Tom Colicchio, one person worked for Keith McNally. I worked for Keith McNally. Another person worked for a BR Guest, and everyone brought all this great positive and negative experience into it. All the negative stuff we kept out, and all the positive things that they did, we brought to it. Are you finding that you're doing that with your business?
You know, it's funny because what I find is like, our concept has been changing, or it has changed between the different locations that we try to negotiate. Yeah. So we were like, we have this space, we could do this. And then
which is smart.
The deal didn't go through. And then like, we have now this space, so we're going to modify that concept that we had at the beginning. And that's why it's called Vinateria. At the beginning, we thought about being a wine bar. But then this new space that we have is larger, so we have a full kitchen there. So it's wine is going to be an important part of the experience, but also food. And it's funny when you were talking about PR and the whole thing. I feel that it's true that's it's a lot of like, it's not who you are or what is your concept, but who is your PR agent, which is.
I mean, we talk about PR, you talk about Harlem, you think of Red Rooster, Marcus Samuelson. I mean,
no.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Exactly. So, but there's that Bao place that's up there, too. I forget the name of it, but who's on, you know, who's interesting and who's on a cover or whatever. You're paying your $5,000 a month to a PR company and stuff. We probably won't get any more guests for saying this, but it's fine. So Gustavo, you're in the kitchen?
I am in the kitchen. Yep.
Okay, and are we workshopping a menu at this point, or?
Well, we have been working with a menu. Okay. We have changed from a small place to have like a full menu. And now we're going to have like, we don't want to call it like a new American cuisine, but it's going to be like a little bit of everything with an Italian influence.
And is that just because that's what you like cooking, or?
Yeah, it's because, I mean, that's the training that we have. I've been working in restaurants like DVGV and Terroir. I work at Lupa, so I have like some Italian, some French influence in my cooking. So we're going to bring that to the restaurant.
And talk about critical timelines, you know, when you hire the staff, when do you, you know, when do you, the kitchen, when is the gas tied off, when is the electric in? Are we anywhere, we're breaking ground on Monday. Is that where we're?
Yes.
Do we need anybody, do we, any volunteers can go?
And, please.
Yeah, help
please
out.
Please just stop by on 119 from Frederick Douglass.
I can help. There. I'm a good digger.
Yeah, do you need any semiconductors? Do you,
yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. You could bring
chemical engineering.
Yeah, exactly. We can blow up the whole thing.
It has been a very interesting process because from when they, what they teach you at school about like how do
which
you open
you,
a restaurant.
Which school did you guys go
to? We went to ICE.
Okay.
But before that, we went to New School to do some courses on how to open a restaurant. And it's very different when you get out there from when you negotiate a space to when you get constructor, when you get an architect. It's like, that's it's one step at a time.
Drew,
like AA.
Drew Nieporn, there you go. told me, he said, the first deal you make as a restaurateur is your lease. That's it. For everything is predicated on that negotiation, what you're going to charge in your restaurant and stuff. And is that why you guys jumped around a lot? When were you looking in the same neighborhood, or were you sort of
We looked for like a year and a half to get a space. We negotiate 5 different spaces for like months. And it's Harlem. It's a very strange neighborhood. I mean, it's amazing, and it's hard. I mean,
yeah, just because it's having its sort of second renaissance, and there's a lot of random buildings that are owned by people that just have neglected it for so long, and you don't know what you're getting into. You know, zoning
and the CFOs over there, it's like it's different than some other spaces in the city, but it's a beautiful neighborhood and it's a great energy up there.
Yeah. You talked about Boqueria. I have to give a shout out to Seamus Mullen, who was just married yesterday. Jess, I don't know his wife now, but Seamus Mullen
And Lin Wang.
And Lin Wang were married yesterday.
Shuang. I'm terrible at the pronunciation. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. It's the morning after. I usually mispronounce people's names 20 times. So I'd like to, yeah. So it was funny. The only reason why I know this, well, because seeing Jess today, and then also I was on Amanda Freitag's Facebook page yesterday doing some research, and I saw her at Seamus Mullen's, you know, wedding. Were you guys there or no?
No, I was working.
Okay, everybody's. So you decide to open a restaurant, okay? And do you save money? Have you gone out like the past 4 years? You're just saving money. You're working, saving money, working, saving money.
I'm gonna start crying now.
But you guys look. I have to say, you have probably the best looking, most well rested people that are about to enter into. The opening a restaurant, I think I've ever, you know, right? Would you agree with me?
They do look very well.
They look very well rested. I mean, they don't. I want to have you guys on in 6 months and see how stressed out you guys look.
I have that talent as well. I think it might be genetic. Like I could not sleep for a couple of days and kind of look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it?
It's called makeup.
Chemical. It's chemical engineering.
Oh, I was engineering some products that help you look young.
So let's is there any other things that we should look for? Is a website up or anything, dates, or should we check a Facebook page?
Well, we have
a Twitter.
No, we should. I think we have a Facebook page, and also the website is under construction.
Okay, so if anyone wants to sort of check in and see what's going on, they should go on Facebook and type in.
What's your cell phone number?
It's Vinateria.
I didn't say it.
It's Vinateria Harlem. Harlem, yes.
Vinateria Harlem. All right, let's take a break. Let's come back. Well, we're going to open up the forum to everybody. We're going to talk shop here. We have all the magazines we're going to go through. We're going to get through every one of these magazines, guys. We're going to read every one of these articles morning after. after we're back. That is the wonderful music from, hold on one second. I have to pull it up. Mashandi Shalimar. Thank you for lending us all of the rights to your music today. We greatly appreciate that. I think there's a website that you can go on and purchase any of this music, and that website is MICHANDISHALIMAR, MashandiShalimar.com, or check them out on iTunes. We're back, and we're opening up the forum here. That's some of the talking points of all these magazines that we're just checking out. And you brought up a good point about Marcus Samuelson. Could you talk about that for a second?
Sure. I was saying that he's so smart what he's doing in Red Rooster, his new restaurant. It's the first time that I got his book was in a cooking class, cooking demonstration, actually, that he did in our school at ICE. And when I went through it, I was like, this is so smart and so beautiful, because basically it's his life as an immigrant.
Yeah, he has an amazing story. I mean, no one can deny that guy that. I mean,
amazing, yes. So he was saying, like, coming to New York and having all these friends cooking or, like, eating out, whatever. And he came out with this new... And I mean, the term is like so used, the new American thing, but it's true. It's a new American table. It's bringing food from all over the world, things that you like, things that a friend maybe show you to cook. And that's what he's doing at Red Rooster. And I think it's an amazing concept and idea.
It's the American cuisine is always constantly being reinvented just from new cultures, specifically in New York. I mean, you can make the argument sort of in the early 90s, new American was Italian, French, and, you know, and American cuisine, you know, Southern cuisine kind of mixed together. Now it's, you know, it grows and grows every year. It's sort of, now you see all over the place the Asian hipster spot. You know, all these kids that grew up in the States that are American kids going back to their roots using new products, and specifically on the Lower East Side.
Yeah, yeah. I would say new American when I don't know how else to describe it, because it's basically everything.
Well, my first restaurant job, it was called Penny Feathers, and I used to, you know, answer the phone, hi, or we'd go to a table and take an order, and they'd be like, what kind of cuisine is it? And I'd be like, international new American. I'd be like, okay. Yeah, so new American is a fallback word for a lot of people.
I always get it when people are asking me for restaurants, and they say, what kind of food is it? New American.
Oh,
and they're always like, okay.
I know.
That means nothing.
What I wanted to talk about. So, was everyone here an art student? We're all restaurant people. I know some people weren't. Everyone here fell into the arts at some point or no?
Arts?
Art, yeah.
I did art in high school.
Your cousin. Yeah, exactly. Well, your cousin went into the art.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So we're all products here. So somewhat of it. So I had a kid in a movie that I made, my student film, and his name was Jeremiah McDonald. And I just have to bring him up because he did a video that went viral, and I think it got 20 million hits recently. And he used a piece of footage from my movie, so we're going to sue him for that. But other than that being said, he did a thing where he talked to his a conversation with my 12-year-old self. Has anyone seen? No one has seen this, so you're not one of the 20 million people.
Hey,
anyway,
awesome.
So he made a video when he was 12 years old, talking to himself when he would be 30, and he asked the questions, and then he took that video when he turned 30 and cut himself as the 30-year-old having this conversation with himself, and it's four minutes long, and he's on the Today Show.
It's the American dream.
Well, it was hysterical. Viral I saw video. This. Yeah, exactly. Now it's like the thing. Speaking of PR and all this stuff, but. Guys, there's an interesting article here in Manhattan Magazine. I get it delivered every week to my house. Love it. Emily Blunt's on the cover. Love this girl. Devil Wears Prada. She's great in it. Okay, let me hold on. I've earmarked the thing. It's called How to Open a Hotspot. So I'm going to go over this with you guys so you can get at least some ideas about how to open a hotspot. Solid investors. Raising money and finding investors is like applying for a job. The better the resume, the easier it is. At the same time, you need to be prepared to do the work and invest yourself.
Should have skipped over that one.
But the
you're getting a little nervous over
the here. The great space is the foundation of this, you know, pyramid scheme here, it looks like. But celebrity clientele. Okay. Our friends are the foundation for a large following. We don't target celebs, but many of our friends have become celebrities. And many celebrities have become friends. So just a couple of tips here in Manhattan Magazine. I like to call the paper record on how to open a hotspot. Has anyone ever read this magazine?
Ever.
It's actually interesting. I know somebody who worked for it, but it's got some funny, like, it's, you know, society, like, who's, you see, like, 25 people, they have no idea who they are, there's their photos on
it. Were you serious about getting delivered?
What's that?
Were you serious about getting it delivered?
No, but I did go to Barnes & Noble and buy all these magazines. Yeah. Take a guess how much all this costs.
I mean, those are like, I don't know, $5 each, right?
Yeah, it's like about $80 worth of stuff.
It's crazy.
R&D.
This is $10.99.
What? I didn't know. I wouldn't have got that, because that's just basic.
Gourmet,
that's just basic
didn't that
recipes.
Magazine close?
This is a special edition. All right, let's close out the show. I'm going to go around everyone, talk about upcoming events. Josh, anything we need to plug?
Upcoming events. No, but come and buy some fish at Russendahl's.
What's the hipster thing? There's like a hipster thing, the Hebrew. Hebster? I love that. What is that thing?
It's a sandwich, actually.
Yeah.
It's called the Super Hebster.
The Super Hebster.
And it's a bagel with horseradish, cream cheese, white fish salad, and wasabi-infused flying fish roe. And it's delicious.
How stoned were you when you created that dish?
I think technically someone else might have created it. And I try not to do that during work.
So anyone that's on Houston Street driving by should definitely check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Guys?
No.
Anyone?
Construction is a big
construction,
event.
It's construction. We're breaking ground. But in, say, December, people can come. Do you have your staff hired?
Hopefully it's going to be before that.
I hope so, too. But say, all right, so let's say early fall, people should come.
Yes.
For employment. And what kind of resumes are you looking for?
As I told you, one step at a time. I don't want to think of resumes.
I'm stressing you out.
This is a perfect opportunity.
It's like first construction.
I'm sorry. That's
why you need to give your cell phone number.
Like first construction, then we'll talk about resumes.
I know a great plumber and a great electrician.
Oh, that's good. You see, I need the resumes.
Yeah, I will give you them. I will give you the resumes. All right, it's been a great show. I want to thank all of our guests. Please, tomorrow at 3:00, tune into SiriusXM to check out, and then tune in for the whole week to check out our good friend Amanda Freitag, who's guest hosting on Martha Stewart. You can follow me on Twitter at the Jason Colucci, Colucci. Like us on Facebook. The Morning After. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website, or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.